This is Case Closed, Crime Stories from the Golden Age of Radio. This is Case Closed, featuring two more old-time radio mysteries for you this Wednesday. We'll begin with Vincent Price as the Saint, in their episode from July 31st, 1949, titled The Saint Goes Underground. Then it's 5-Minute Mystery and Tune Into Murder. We'll finish off with the 21st Precinct and Post Number 7, their episode from August 11th, 1953.
Adventures of the Saint, starring Vincent Price. The Saint, based on characters created by Leslie Charteris and known to millions from books, magazines, and motion pictures. The Robin Hood of modern crime is now transcribed for radio, starring Hollywood's brilliant and talented actor Vincent Price as the Saint.
Anything wrong, Captain?
Nothing serious, Mr. Templer. Just coming down here for a check. Go on just as soon as we can.
Oh, and where is here?
Headstone, New Mexico. Used to be a big silver mining town, but now it's just another little town, I guess. Although I did notice there's a carnival playing over on the edge of this emergency landing strip.
Well, how long are we to enjoy the hospitality of Headstone?
Oh, 2 or 3 hours. Long enough to see the town, have dinner if you like. We're sorry to delay you, sir.
Oh, it's all right, Captain. I'm seldom bored in a strange town.
Well, you better go back and fasten your seatbelt, Mr. Templer. We're coming down now.
Right. I'll see you later.
Well, good evening, Saint.
You know me? Yet I don't seem to recall your face.
Harry Kelly, and you don't recall my face because we've never met, but I've seen many pictures of you, and so I recognized you immediately.
Well, that's very flattering. Tell me, Mr. Kelly, how can I get into town?
You can find a cab on the other side of the carnival. Planning on staying long?
Not at all. Should I?
On the contrary, I was just going to suggest that I doubt if Headstone would welcome the presence of the Saint. Just a friendly remark, you understand.
Oh, naturally. And if I may be permitted a friendly question, why are you telling me this?
Just an interest in the continued health of my fellow human. If you have any trouble in town, look me up. Anyone can tell you where to find me.
I look, the big show is just about to start. See little Fatima, the girl who shakes and shivers like a bowl full of jelly. Only one dime, 10 cents, the tenth part of a dollar. Hurry, step right up.
Learn what the stars hold for you. I read the past, the present, and the future. Learn your fortune, young man.
I already know it, Grandmother. I'm destined to meet a tall, dark, and beautiful woman. I'll settle for nothing less.
I see strange lines on your face, young man.
Huh?
I will tell your fortune without charge. Give me your hand. I see danger. Beware of a blonde young woman. She will bring you death.
There are worse ways of dying, Grandmother.
I see danger, much danger, for one with a halo about his head. Blood and death, unless he travels. I see...
I think I'm beginning to get the idea. You might tell your crystal ball that I'm beginning to be interested. Goodbye, Grandmother, and may the saints bless you.
Taxi, mister?
Oh, thank you. Say, do you suppose you can drive me somewhere that serves a good dinner?
Sure. The Silver Dollar Hotel.
Oh, fine.
You know, I was just sitting there communing with nature about how many guys there are who blow their wad to watch some dame do a hula but won't spend a dime on a hack.
Do I detect a touch of Brooklyn?
How could you miss? That's me, chum. Ziggy from Flatbush. I used to drive a hack in Brooklyn. Now I own the only hack in Headstone. It's light, huh? You know, I ain't seen a Brooklyn Bridge for 10 years since I come out here for my health. Like I always say, it's a smart man who knows when it's healthy to get out of town.
Meaning what?
Does everything have to mean something? Me, I mind my own business. I stay healthy. That's why I'm living in Headstone instead of under one.
I see. But if you didn't mind your own business, I suppose you'd give me some advice about leaving Headstone. Is that it?
No advice, Mac. That's part of minding my own business. Headstone is a great place for strangers to visit, if they paid up their insurance.
Here you are, waiter. Very nice dinner. My check, please. No, thank you. Keep the change.
Hello.
Well, this is a surprising hotel. First a beautiful dinner, and then an even more beautiful blonde.
May I sit down?
Oh, by all means, Miss...
Betty Connolly. You're Simon Templer?
I should have worn my dark glasses. But now that the truth is out, you might as well call me Simon.
All right, Simon.
Now, how did you know who I am? Now, don't tell me that you were just passing and recognized me.
Well, Ziggy told me that you were here. He owns and drives the taxi here in Headstone.
I know I shouldn't look a gift blonde in the hair, but why did Ziggy tell you I was in here?
Well, Ziggy knows that I need help, and he thought, well, that is, since you're the saint, you might help me.
Well, I have been known to help beautiful blondes on occasion. But tell me why you should need help, Betty.
Someone's been trying to kill me.
Oh, there should be a law against that. Are you sure?
I've been shot at twice, and everybody here has been very unfriendly, except Ziggy and a man named Harry Kelly.
I've noticed the unfriendliness in this town, but being unfriendly towards you is obviously an indication of insanity.
Oh, please don't joke about it. I'm frightened.
All right, my dear. Now tell me about it.
Well, my father was known as Silver Slim Connolly. He lived here for years. But he sent me east to school when I was very young, and I didn't come back here until recently. My father died about a month ago.
Oh, I'm sorry.
He was broke, and all he left me was his old silver mine. He called it the Betty Mine, after me.
And I take it somebody wants the mine.
No, the mine is completely worthless. There hasn't been any silver in it for years.
But, my dear, you were shot at twice. Have you any idea who did the shooting?
No. But it might be the same man who told me to get out of town.
Oh, who?
Mike McCarthy. Ziggy says he's an eastern gangster who's been living out here for several months. Will you help me, Mr. Simon?
Well, I've never been able to say no to a pretty girl. You mentioned a man named Harry Kelly before. Just who is he?
He knew my father. He's been very friendly to me, although he thought I ought to leave town, too.
I've met Mr. Kelly, and he intrigues me very much. I think we'll go see him.
All right. Just a minute.
Hmm?
There was some red dust on your coat.
Oh, thank you. Ziggy apparently doesn't get enough passengers to keep his cab dusted. Did you say Ziggy was parked outside in his chariot?
Mm-hmm. He was when I came in. Oh, there he is.
Yes, looking exactly as if he were back in Brooklyn. Ziggy!
Oh, so she found you, huh?
Thanks to your bird dogging, which I must admit in this case has done much to overcome any natural prejudice against cab drivers that I might have. Say, do you know where Harry Kelly lives?
Sure.
And let's go then.
Huh?
Hey, don't you ever clean out this hack? What's all this dust?
Well, who knows? Maybe it was that redhead that hired me yesterday. So she had dandruff.
Ziggy, you missed your calling. You're as funny as an undertaker. Well, now, Ziggy, I don't suppose you'd care to tell me why you warned me to get out of Headstone.
Got me all wrong, Saint. I wasn't warning you. I was just talking about myself.
And I don't suppose you'd care to tell me why somebody took pot shots at Miss Connolly here and told her to get out of town, too.
Me, I don't know nothing. Like I was telling you, Saint, I mind my own business. Maybe you stay ignorant that way, but it's healthier, and I like it like that.
And in that case, why did you send Miss Connolly in to see me?
Well, like you can see, she's a pretty little pigeon. She needs to know some guy will help her. Now, it ain't no secret that the saint goes around mixing in other people's business, so I tell her to see you.
And who told you I was the saint?
I got eyes in my head, ain't I? Like I said, I used to hack in Brooklyn. I got around.
What about this Mike McCarthy?
Strictly smart money, saint.
Huh?
A lot of guys have crossed his path once, if you get what I mean.
What about Harry Kelly?
Local stuff. A nice schmo, but no more.
You're doing all right for a guy that doesn't know anything.
You got me wrong, pal. Ziggy, he looks people over, but he don't see nothing except one guy is tough, another guy is a schmall, and maybe another guy is too nosy.
I really don't think we should try to involve Ziggy, Simon. He's been very nice as it is.
Yeah, she's got something, pal. I ain't really equipped for it, because the way you're headed, only a saint could feel at home. Saint. Kelly lives on the first floor in the room.
Oh, thanks. Wait for us, Ziggy. We've got a couple of other calls to make after this.
Don't worry, I'll wait. If you get in any trouble, just yell. Then I'll drive over and tell the sheriff I heard somebody yell for help.
Oh, thanks, pal. Come on, Betty. Well, I hope our friend is in and that he talks.
Yes. Strange. Harry telling you to come and see him if you had any trouble. If he had any connection with me, then why hasn't he said something to me?
Well, he sounded to me like a cautious man. Maybe he did know something, but didn't want to say anything unless he felt sure something was going to be done. Well, we'll soon know.
Yes, who is it?
Simon Templar.
Oh, the saint. Just a minute.
Those shots were in that room.
This is no time for conversation, darling. We're going in.
Oh, but...
Like this. Kelly.
Oh, Simon.
Kelly. Kelly, this is Simon Templar.
Saint?
Yes, Kelly, the saint. Who shot you?
The window. The saint. The mine.
Kelly. Well, Betty, he isn't going to tell us anything now. His killer did a very thorough job. Window open. Must have shot from here. There's a shell on the fireplace.
But what was he saying?
Sounded like sin. Come on, Betty. We're going to spread a little saintliness. And I think I know where to begin. Ziggy, didn't you hear anything?
Well, I noticed some noise, but like I told you...
I know. You mind your own business.
Are we going to the sheriff, Simon?
No, not yet. Ziggy, who's the estayer in this town?
Old man Matthews. The office is closed now, but he lives right ahead there. That big white house.
Okay, stop there.
But Simon...
I'd like to satisfy a little curiosity about that mine of yours. I'll be right back. You stay in here, Betty.
What do you want?
Mr. Matthews.
Who else should be here? It's my house, ain't it? What do you want?
My name is Simon Templar. I wanted to ask you if you know the Connolly Silver Mine.
I know every mine within 200 miles of here, young fella. Hey, ain't that Betty Connolly sitting up there in that taxi?
Yes.
Then why can't she tell you about the mine? She owns it.
Well, she has told me, but I just wanted to check about the possibility of a mistake. How much silver would you say there was in the Connolly mine?
About enough to put in your eye and still leave room for your finger.
Couldn't there be a hidden vein in it?
Nope. There ain't been enough silver around here to make a dime for years and years.
Could there be anything else of value in it?
Mud and water, if you call that valuable.
You sure?
Of course I'm sure. Young fella, I've been here man and boy for 70 years, and I ain't got no time to stand around answering darn fool questions. Goodbye.
Well, goodbye. Betty, you may be right. Old man Matthews says the mine is worthless, too. So, Ziggy, take us to see Mike McCarthy.
Are you sure you want to go there, say? If I was you, I'd get on that plane. It's leaving pretty soon.
No, Ziggy, I've decided not to leave Headstone just yet. Later, you can drive me over to Albuquerque, and I'll take the chief the rest of the way.
Okay, chum, it's your funeral.
Please be careful.
Don't you worry, Betty. The Halo Wearers Benevolent Association would be very upset if anything happened to me. I'll be right out.
Yeah?
I'm looking for Mike McCarthy.
Well, you found him.
It's my Boy Scout training. It never fails. My name is Simon Templar.
The saint?
I've been known by that name.
So what?
That's a very interesting question. I must try to think of an answer sometime. Meanwhile, I thought you might like to know that I heartily disapprove of your telling a certain Miss Betty Connolly that she ought to leave town.
What's the girl to you?
That's my business.
I could make it mine. And if I do, your halo's going to slip down and start choking you.
I thought bullets were more in your line.
Meaning what?
Meaning the shots fired at Miss Connolly and a little gunning job only a few minutes ago.
I didn't do any gunning. But I'm liable to if you don't beat it.
You sound so sure of yourself, Michael.
That's because I got more in my hand than an itching palm.
That's a very pretty gun, Mike. But I'm very much afraid that nothing will satisfy my curiosity short of knowing why you want to get Miss Connolly out of town.
I got answers for nosy guys. Six of them. I'll just stand right there. Stay away from that desk, Saint, or
don't worry, Mike. I have no interest in the desk at all. But I do have an interest in Miss Connolly. And now, Michael, I'll bid you adieu.
Simon?
Oh, not much, I'm afraid. The conversation was just getting interesting when Mike had a sudden attack of dropsy.
That's funny. I never heard of him being sick.
Oh, that's because you mind your own business, Ziggy, like you told me. Betty, where is that silver mine of yours?
About 2 miles out of town.
Is there any place in town where we can rent a car?
Well, why, I have a car. Why?
I feel a prospecting urge coming over me. Ziggy, take us to Miss Connolly's car, and then we can dispense with your valuable service.
What's wrong with my cat?
Nothing, Ziggy. It's just that I don't like people looking over my shoulder. Especially when I visit a lonely mine in the company of a beautiful girl.
Well, here's the Betty mine. Although I don't know why you want to see it.
Frankly, I don't know either. As long as I'm here, I might as well take the 40-cent tour.
Certainly, sir. Right this way. This old cable car goes down into the mine. All we have to do is stand on the platform and pull the cable. It works with balanced weight.
Clever, these 49ers. How far down?
On the 40-cent tour, we give the exact distance. 354 feet, 6 inches.
Thank you. And thank you for having electric lights in a mine that hasn't been worked for years.
Oh, the mine has its own battery. See? Here's a bulb on the car. Shall we go down?
What are we waiting for? Let's go. Maybe the lights will go out.
Just hold it like that. I've been waiting for you two.
Well, Michael McCarthy, I was wondering if we were going to have your company.
And this time, wise guy, don't try anything.
Don't tell me, Michael, that you're going prospecting with us.
I'm riding down with you, but I'm coming back alone. Start the car down, Saint, but don't try no tricks.
You have a suspicious mind, Mike. Well, here we go. Call out your floors, please. Mezzanine, ladies' underwear, galoshes, and accessories.
You'll be singing a different tune pretty soon, Saint. You both had your chance to leave town your way. Now you're going to leave my way.
Oh, Simon, I'm sorry.
Oh, don't be, Betty. This is my first ride on an open cable car.
And it'll be your last.
I wouldn't be too sure. Unless that cable breaks before we get to the bottom.
What are you talking about?
Sucker! Little crowded here for a 1-2, so I guess a 1.5 will have to do.
Oh, Simon. How terrible.
There now, Betty. It's all right.
Oh, Simon, it could have been you. He almost knocked you off the platform, too.
Yeah, it was the padded shoulders in my coat. I felt them hit the side.
Oh, look at your shoulders. They're covered with dirt from the sides of the shaft.
Yeah. Huh. It's red dirt. Wait a minute. Well, we can go back up, Betty. Mike doesn't need our help, and I don't need anybody to answer questions anymore.
Simon, I'll never understand you. Why did you look at the dirt on your coat and say you didn't need any more questions?
Because that dirt was red sulfide, Betty. And it explains why Mike was so anxious to run you out of town.
Well, I don't see how. Red sulfide is used in paint, but that doesn't make it valuable.
Red sulfide is also cinnabar ore, from which we get mercury, and that is pretty valuable. Evidently, your mine is rich in cinnabar, so it's worth a lot of money, Betty.
Oh, then that was what Kelly was trying to tell us when he said sin.
Yes, he was trying to say cinnabar.
How can I ever thank you, Simon?
Well, I have a couple of ideas on the subject. Oh, but now people would say I was chasing you for your money. So, I guess you can just see me off on the train. We'll stop in town and have Ziggy drive us to Albuquerque.
Oh, but I'll drive you.
Now, I insist on taking a cab. I don't want you coming back alone. I may want to change my mind about fortune hunting.
Like I said, Saint, I'm glad to see you leaving. This town is just funny about strangers, but you ought to take Miss Connolly, would you?
But she doesn't have to go now, Ziggy, and besides, she's rich.
She's what?
Yes, Ziggy, we found out that Dad's mine is valuable after all.
You mean you found silver in it?
No, mercury.
Oh, the stuff they put in thermometers?
That's the stuff, Ziggy, but it's used for a lot of other things, particularly in wartime, and it's worth a lot of money.
Well, what do you know? So that's why Mike was trying to make you leave, huh?
That's it.
Well, did you stop and tell the sheriff?
We didn't have time, but I'll see him when we go back.
Oh, that's pretty nice for you, ain't it, buddy? Oh, here we are. Just in time, too. Yeah, the chief's in already.
Very nice timing, Ziggy. Thanks, Betty, for keeping my forced visit to Headstone from being dull.
Oh, Simon, well, why don't you stay in Headstone? I won't know how to run the mine or what to do with the money or anything.
You'll learn, Betty. You know what to do when you get back to town?
Yes, but... Well, will the sheriff believe me? I mean, about Mike McCarthy killing Harry Kelly.
I don't think he will, since Mike didn't kill Kelly.
But...
Kelly was shot with an automatic. He ejected a shell on the fireplace, remember? But Mike McCarthy carried a revolver. You saw it.
Yes, but will the sheriff...
Oh, the sheriff will believe when you show him that the gun that killed Kelly is in Ziggy's pocket.
What? What are you talking about?
You knew about the cinnabar ore in the mine. You carried some of it away to be tested in your cab, and there was red dust in it, which you tried to explain with a corny gag.
You're crazy.
Harry Kelly had an idea of what was going on, so you slipped around to the back while we were at the front door and killed him.
All right, wise guy, you're so smart. What about Mike?
Mike was working for you.
But Simon, Ziggy told me that you were in town.
Sure, he couldn't be sure that I wasn't here to break up his little scheme, so the smartest thing to do was to get us together so he could watch both of us. He thought I would use his cab, as I did, and it would be easy. But he slipped up when he sent Mike out to the mine ahead of us. Ziggy was the only one who knew where we were going.
Okay, pal, you asked for it.
This time, sweetheart! Like you said, pal, you should have followed your own advice about minding your own business. Well, he's all yours, Betty. The gun that killed Kelly is now on the seat beside him. All you have to do is turn the body and the gun over to the sheriff, and from there on in, he'll mind Ziggy's business for him.
But, Simon...
Don't worry, Betty. I'll stop back someday to make sure that Venus is in conjunction with Mercury.
You have just heard another adventure of the Saint, the Robin Hood of modern crime. Now, here is our star, Vincent Price.
Ladies and gentlemen, how many times there have been men just like Ziggy led into crime by insatiable greed, forgetting the simplest truths so aptly phrased by John Dryden. Murder may pass unpunished for a time, but tardy justice will o'ertake the crime. This is Vincent Price extending a personal invitation to all of you to join us again next week at this same time for another adventure of The Saint. Good night.
Tonight's script of The Saint was written by Michael Cramoy. Our cast included Harry Bartell, Barney Phillips, Colleen Collins, Fred Howard, and Tony Barrett. The music was composed and conducted by Harry Zimmerman. The Saint is a James L. Safier Agency production and was transcribed and directed by Thomas A. McAvity. Don't forget that The Saint comic books are on sale at all newsstands. Your announcer, Merrill Ross. This is the Mutual Broadcasting System.
ladies and gentlemen, this is Vincent Carraway, your mystery storyteller, inviting you back again for another tale of mystery and murder.
Oh, turn that thing off. Isn't the shutter so? I don't see why I listen.
It isn't every woman who can flip a dial and hear her husband's voice.
But I don't know where Vince got the idea for those horrid stories. It's so depressing, it's making a nervous wreck out of me.
Darling, you are in a state. What is it?
I could have sworn I heard footsteps in the hallway.
Oh, no, Joanna, this is preposterous. You mustn't let this get you.
The lights! They've gone out!
There is someone. There's someone right outside the door.
Joanna!
Good heavens, she's dead!
Now, Miss Warren, if you'd just calm down and tell me exactly what you can.
There's nothing left to tell except what you already know. Hilda called you on the maid's phone, and then I called Mr. Carraway at the radio station from in here.
Weren't you on the air, Mr. Carraway, at the time of the murder?
Yes, I was just about finishing my show. I heard the phone ring from the studio and caught it just in time. I got here as quickly as I could. It's only a short distance.
Poor Mrs. Carraway. Thank heaven she died without ever knowing.
Knowing what?
But her best friend was trying to get her husband, that's what.
Hilda!
You needn't Hilda me in that tone of voice, Miss Warren.
It is you, Hilda.
Kill Joanna, are you crazy? Don't be such a conceited fool, Vincent. No man is worth murder. Not even you.
So you were in love with Mr. Carraway, Mrs. Warren.
So what? I might have wished her dead, but I didn't kill her.
Mr. Carraway, you said you heard the phone from the studio and just got to the phone in time. Wasn't there anyone else to answer it?
At this time of night, there is no one else at the station except myself and the engineer, and he, of course, is in the control booth on the next floor.
I thought the engineers worked right off the studio.
They usually do. However, I work my own private studio just off my office. It's perfectly soundproof for broadcasting.
Very considerate of your employers, I must say.
Yes, it is. Well, of course, everyone isn't entitled to such privileges.
Nor does anyone have such a good opportunity for murder.
Murder? What are you talking about?
Just this, Mr. Carraway. I'm arresting you for the murder of your wife.
Why did the inspector accuse Vincent Carraway of the murder of his wife? In just a moment, we'll hear. But first...
over the air a mile away when my wife was shot. Thousands who heard my show can testify to that.
Yes, thousands can testify they heard the voice of Vincent Carraway, but not the man. Because at the exact time you were lulling thousands to sleep by means of a record you'd made earlier, you raced to this house, stole in on your unsuspecting wife, shot her, and raced back to the studio in time to remove the record when it reached its end. Not even the engineer could see that it wasn't you before the microphone. You claim to have heard the phone ring while you were still in the studio. But studios are entirely soundproof, Mr. Carraway. You couldn't possibly have heard that phone ringing in the next office.
Sergeant Klein. In the basement where? 340? Who shot him? Who? Oh. Is he dead? He's not dead. Who's there? Sergeant Burns there?
You are in the muster room at the 21st Precinct, the nerve center. A call is coming through. You will follow the action taken pursuant to that call from this minute until the final report is written in the 124 room at the 21st Precinct.
All right, I'll send an ambulance. Emergency squad for what? Who said so? Okay, tell them I'll call CB to send the ESD car. Yeah, right away. Right away.
21st Precinct. It's just lines on a map of the city of New York. Most of the 173,000 people wedged into the 9/10 of a square mile between Fifth Avenue and the East River wouldn't know if you asked them that they lived or worked in the 21st. Whether they know it or not, the security of their persons, their homes, and their property is my job. My job and the job of the 160 patrolmen, 11 sergeants, and 4 lieutenants with whom I'm the boss. My name is Kennelly, Frank Kennelly. I'm captain in command of the 21st.
What makes a city? Not buildings, not subways, not business. People make a city. From dawn to midnight, from midnight to dawn, the rich and the poor and the good and the bad pour their lives together and stir up the city, as in the 21st, even on a quiet night.
I was working my 6 p.m. to 8 a.m. tour. At 10, after I'd finished reading and signing the reports and communications that had accumulated, I investigated 2 minor complaints about conditions in the precinct that had been brought to my attention. At midnight, I turned out the platoon for the late tour and went on patrol until shortly after 2 a.m. Then I returned to the station house where Lieutenant Gorman as desk officer and Sergeant Klein were on duty in the muster room. I went around behind the desk to sign an entry in the blotter stating that I had completed patrol and returned to the precinct house.
Thank you, Captain.
Yeah.
There's some coffee hot if you want it.
Well, not a bad idea. What's doing?
Nothing much, Captain. A hack driver turned in a woman's purse he found in the back of the cab. It had $62.08 in it, that's all.
Any identification in it?
No, sir. Just some money in a small change purse, compact, a handkerchief, and a pack of cigarettes. Nothing else. He thought he was a big hero.
All right, 29.
So, you guys are supposed to look in the back seat of your hacks every time you discharge a passenger. Next time, you get sent down to the hack bureau on a violation.
Well, I'll get that coffee.
Yes, sir.
Oh, Sergeant.
Oh, yes, sir.
All right, go ahead. Take the call.
Yes, sir. 21st Precinct, Sergeant Klein. All right, 15. You take the meal period down. All right.
Okay?
Yes, sir, Captain.
I had a communication from the Telegraph Bureau. They're interested in the QD-76 report dated last week. Car jumped the curb and knocked over a call box on Park Avenue. The driver didn't answer the summons in court, and they want to issue a warrant. Can you get it out?
Yes, sir, but can I wait a few minutes?
Well, what's the trouble?
I got a man on post 6 minutes late ringing in.
Who's that?
Patrolman Bevan, post number 4, Captain.
All right, go ahead.
Yes, sir.
When did he ring in last?
1:42, Captain, from box number 23, on time to the minute.
Communications Bureau, Patrolman Thomas.
This is Sergeant Klein, 21st Precinct.
Yes, sir.
Have 604 to call the 21st.
604, yes, sir.
He's not taking his meal, is he?
No, sir, he's not due for his meal until 3:30 to 4. He's 7 minutes late now.
What's the trouble?
Patrolman Bevan, post number 4, he's 7 minutes late ringing in.
I'm kidding. He's been a good man, Captain. One of the best hooks we got in here in that last bunch.
Yes, I know.
Was he ringing on time earlier?
Right on time. 21st Precinct, Sergeant Klein.
Box 31, Sergeant Byrne.
Oh, hello. It's Sergeant Byrne. Listen, ride over to post number 4 and see if you can locate Bevan. He's 8 minutes late ringing in.
Bevan?
Yeah.
I rode by there about 20, 25 minutes ago. I saw him on post.
Did you stop and talk to him?
Yeah. You didn't give him any calls, did you?
No, not a thing from here.
Okay, I'll get back to you.
Well, he said he rode by there about 20 or 25 minutes ago and saw him.
Is he riding over there now?
Yes.
He's a good kid, that Bevan. Father was a lieutenant in Brooklyn East Borough headquarters. He retired a year or so ago. Did you know him, Captain?
No, no. You get out that QD-76, Sergeant.
Yes, sir, right away. He's sure in the drawer, Captain.
21st Precinct, Sergeant Klein.
What?
Well, who is it that stabbed? Who? Speak into the phone.
I went into the 124 room and had
What's
a cup of coffee.
Address?
Patrolman Ryan, the clerical man,
Where?
Called to my attention an MV-104A report concerning an accident on Franklin D. Roosevelt Drive along the East River, which had occurred during the day tour. A passenger in one of the cars involved had died of injuries in Mount Sinai Hospital at 1:50 a.m. I instructed him to have the desk officer notify the Communications Bureau and the Manhattan East Motor Vehicle Homicide Squad. I went back to my office to read and sign more reports to be sent to the 6th Division Headquarters, 160 East 35th Street. At 2:35 a.m., Sergeant Klein walked across the muster room and stuck his head in the open door of my office.
Captain.
Come in.
Sergeant Burns just rang in.
Yes?
He's been over every inch of post number 4. He can't find any sign of Bevan.
Where did he look? Just on the street?
So far, Captain, that's all he had time for.
All right, come on. Oh, call the sector car from over there.
Yes.
Have him drop his recorder on post number 4 and bring the car by here for me.
Yes. It's beginning not to make sense, Captain. No sense at all.
Communications Bureau Patrolman Thomas.
Sergeant Klein, 21st Precinct. Have 608 call the 21st, will you?
Yes, sir, 608, right away.
All right, let's take a look at the map, Sergeant.
That's pretty quiet post normally, Captain.
Yeah.
There's not much open around there this time of night. 3 or 4 bars and grills, maybe.
An all-night luncheonette here.
There's another luncheonette here. It's open all night.
That's real crazy, the whole thing. What time was Bevan due to ring in last?
2:12, Captain. He's almost a half hour late.
I stood behind the desk for a few minutes and watched as 2 robbery, assault, and Section 1897 suspects were brought down by Lieutenant Matt King, commander of the 21st Detective Squad, for booking. The sector car came and Patrolman Farrell drove me to post number 4. We located Sergeant Burns. He already had his operator, Patrolman Mercado, and Patrolman Eisman on the job, making a building-by-building search for Patrolman Bevan. Post number 4 consists of 3 square blocks between 1st and 2nd Avenues. As in many parts of New York, the complexion of the streets changed from building to building. An old law tenement might be flanked by a fine apartment house on one side and a garage on the other. We shook every door, went in every basement, inspected every courtyard, and climbed every roof. In this, we had assistance from the men on adjacent posts, from the men in the ESD car patrolling the district, and from Lieutenant King, 2 of his detectives of the 21st Squad. By 3:18 a.m., there was still no sign of Patrolman Bevan.
Beats me, Captain. Just beats the living daylights out of me.
Yeah.
Bevan was the kind of a guy that...
Wait a minute. There's somebody walking.
Where, Captain?
Okay. Oh, yeah.
Hey, mister. Mister, wait a minute.
We want to talk to you.
Oh, no, no, no.
Have you been around here for the last hour?
Look, I'm so mad. It was too biz. That's all. Just too biz. You can't kill a man over 2 biz, can you?
What's your name?
My name is Joseph Lance Ball, Jr. Jr. because I was named after my father, had the same name, only senior. 2 beers, that's all.
Look, have you seen a policeman around here tonight?
A policeman? Yeah, I've seen a cop around here.
When?
Right now, him. He's a cop. And, oh, look, the sergeant, too. 2 beers, sergeant. You got my word of honor, my scout's honor.
Where do you live?
Joseph Lance Bolney, Jr. 2 beers.
No, no, you told us your name. Where do you live?
There, right there. I almost made it, too, didn't I? Almost. Now, listen, you won't tell Alma. Please don't tell Alma.
All right, come along.
Take me to jail, lock me up, and throw the 2 beers away, but don't tell Alma.
Come along.
That's all I have. You can ask anybody.
Is this the house?
Yeah, this is it. 728. 728, apartment 60. You're not going to tell Alma?
Got the keys?
I think so. I think I got my keys, but please don't tell Alma.
We let you tell her yourself. You make the stand?
Oh, yeah, sure. Thank you. Thank you very much. Well, good night, gentlemen.
Good night.
It's a pleasure to have found with you.
Well, there's Matt King.
Captain.
Hello, Matt.
We found him, Captain.
Where?
The next block in the basement of a tenement, 740. He was shot.
How bad?
He's not dead, but it's pretty bad. With a jaw and neck on the right side.
Is he conscious?
No, he lost a lot of blood. Even if he was conscious, I don't think he'd be able to talk. That's the ambulance, I guess.
Who shot him?
You had any idea? Yes, sir.
Who?
It looks like he shot himself.
Lieutenant King drove us around to the house. It was an old law tenement building. The ambulance and the sector car were parked in front. It was 3:31 a.m. There was no crowd on the sidewalk, but tenants in nightclothes were beginning to stick their heads out of the front windows. The first floor above the street was occupied by 2 business establishments, a beauty parlor and a radio repair shop. An iron gate and fence separated the basement stairs from the sidewalk. We went down.
Go ahead, Captain. basement's been vacant for about a year.
Yeah.
Be right with you, Captain.
Whitey.
All right, be careful now.
Yeah.
Roll him on the stretcher. Just roll him on. All right, get his feet there.
Okay.
I got them. Easy now.
Easy.
Okay. All right, thanks. Thanks a lot.
Doctor, I'm Captain Kennelly.
Captain?
How does it look?
It went through the maxillary bone of the jaw, Captain. On the way, it probably hit a vein in the neck. Lost a lot of blood.
How is he?
Pretty bad.
Did he shoot himself?
The gun was fired at very close range, Captain. Not farther than this. His face and head are full of powder marks.
I see.
All right, easy with him.
All right, lift together now.
Yeah.
Come on, lift.
This way.
Watch it, you've got very little clearance there.
Easy, easy.
What's the turn there?
That's it.
Pull that back in, high going up. Come on.
Captain.
Yes, Matt?
Whitey and Novak have been talking to the tenant.
Yes?
They can't find anybody who heard the shot. The next floor up, the stores, and the flats don't start until the second floor.
Only one shot?
Are you sure? That's all that was fired from a service gun, Captain.
Is it possible he chased someone down here? Is it possible they had a gun and shot him?
Yes, sir, it's possible.
But not likely.
No, sir. That shot was fired at very close range. There isn't any sign of another person being down here.
Is that his flashlight there?
Yeah. We're leaving it lay there for a while till we get some measurements.
Was it turned on?
It was on, Captain. The switch, that is. The light was broken when it dropped, apparently. The gun was on the floor right near him.
How old is he, Captain?
He's on his way, Captain.
How old is he, Sergeant?
24, 25.
Mm-hmm. Married?
Yeah. Yeah, he's married. A couple of young kids.
Do you have any personal problems that you know of?
Not that I know of, Lieutenant.
He never spoke to me about any personal problems, man.
Well, he's got a big personal problem now.
Yes, he has. If he lives.
I waited around the scene for a few more minutes while Lieutenant King and his detectives continued their investigation and Sergeant Burns talked to Lieutenant Gorman and got information for his UF-6. He ordered the sector cars to resume patrol and released the ESD car to its regular duties. From a call box on the corner, I gave instructions to the desk officer to notify the division command regarding the occurrence. He told me that according to Patrolman Bevan's records, he resided in Jackson Heights, Queens. His wife's name, Marion. I instructed Lieutenant Gorman to call CB with a request that the 110th Precinct notify Patrolman Bevan was wounded and in Bellevue Hospital. Otherwise, things were still quiet in the precinct. Patrolman Mercado was assigned to post number 4. Patrolman Farrell drove me downtown to Bellevue. I waited in the doctor's lounge for the surgeon. Dr. Lowfield?
Yes, I'm Dr. Lowfield.
Captain Kennelly, 21st Precinct. We met.
Oh, yes, Captain.
Well, what kind of a chance do you think he has?
Fair, Captain, just fair.
No better than that?
Well, we tried to probe around in there when he came into emergency. We couldn't reach the slug. It's pretty deep. There's no telling where it went after it penetrated or what organs it hit. I sent him up to be x-rayed. That'll locate the slug, and I'll go in after it.
Well, does it have to come out now?
The sooner the better, Captain.
What does surgery do to his chances, Doctor?
Well, he's apparently a very healthy young man, physically. Under the circumstances, his pulse and respiration are both better than can be expected.
I see. Does it appear to you that he shot himself?
The gun was fired at very close range.
Powder mark?
That's right, yes, sir. He has a family, doesn't he?
Yes, his wife's been notified. She's on her way. She'll be here any minute.
I'll have to talk to her and explain what I plan to do. I'll need her consent.
Well, I don't think there'll be any trouble about that, Doctor.
Oh, excuse me.
Sure.
Dr. Lowfield? Yes. All right. Right there. Yes, we'll be out. Thank you. Mrs. Bevan, she's waiting out at the reception desk.
All right.
That way, Captain.
Thank you.
This is the worst part of my job, Captain.
Not the best part of mine.
Mm. That's her, I guess.
I'll talk to her. Mrs. Bevan?
Yes.
I'm Captain Kennelly.
How, Joe? Where is he?
Well, this is Dr. Lowfield.
He's dead, isn't he? That's what you're going to tell me.
No. No, he's not dead.
You sure? You're positive?
I just left him. You'd better sit down, Mrs. Bevan.
That's all right.
Please, sit down.
Yes, all right. Awful. Really the worst thing in the world.
We're going to have to operate.
Right away?
Yes, right away.
If it's got to be done. Suppose it's all right, isn't it, Captain?
Yes, it has to be done.
All right.
Well?
Doctor?
Yeah?
Can I see him? Before, I mean.
I don't think it would be wise, Mrs. Bevan.
Oh.
Well, I have to get up to him.
Yes, that would be a good idea.
I'll be back down as soon as possible. As soon as possible.
What was his name? Doctor who?
Dr. Lowfield.
Is he good?
Fine as they come.
That's good. Awful. Worst thing in the world. Joe would come home and tell me about notifications. He'd tell me how I'd have to find a mother or a wife or a father and tell them that someone was hurt or dead. He'd tell me how I'd always get a neighbor who knew the person he had to notify. And then the doorbell rang and there was Mrs. Petey from next door and then Mr. Coleman. I screamed. I really screamed. I just don't know what to think.
I know, Mrs.
Bevan. I knew what they were going to say. They were nice, very nice. But he didn't know anything. Just that he was shot and that he was here. He didn't know how or why or how bad or anything. Make it worse, the kids woke up. Or one of them, Jackie, I think. Mrs. Creedy's staying with them. But she's glad her husband isn't a cop. He's a salesman or something. Very nice people.
I'm sure they are.
But Captain, you've got to tell me how bad it's Joe. Gonna die. I don't know what I'd do.
He's in serious condition, Mrs. Bevan.
Serious? God.
Has he had any problems lately? Real problems?
What do you mean?
Well, I mean, have you had any financial difficulties or any trouble at home?
Why?
Have you?
Maybe manage.
How about you and George?
What do you mean?
Well, you're getting along all right?
It's been fine. We're very happy. We have a nice home, two very beautiful children. We couldn't be happier.
I'm glad to hear that.
What do you want to know for?
Oh, we just have to know everything.
How did you get shot, Captain? Who did it? Do you know?
Well, not exactly, Mrs. Bevan. We have an idea. We're trying to make sure. I waited with Mrs. Bevan for another 15 or 20 minutes until her mother arrived from Brooklyn. The operation had not yet been completed. I arrived back at the precinct house at 5:14 a.m. Muster room was quiet. Hello, Ken.
How is it, Captain?
Not too good. They hadn't brought him downstairs yet when I left.
That can be a rough operation, I guess.
Yeah. What's doing around here?
Something new, Captain.
All right, 31.
Hello, Captain. Any messages, Sergeant? Just division headquarters. The division captain wants you to call if there's any change in Bevan's condition. You needn't bother unless there's a change.
Okay.
Hasn't been a change, has it?
No. Still critical.
Sure. Beats me. Sure beats me. Here's some hot coffee, Captain.
No, thanks.
21st Precinct, Sergeant Klein. Who is this calling, please?
Dr. Lowfield of Bellevue. It's important.
Hold on, please. Captain, Dr. Lowfield of Bellevue.
All right, I'll take it here. Captain Canelli.
Dr. Lowfield, Captain.
Yes, Doctor.
I finished the operation. I think he's going to be all right.
Good. That's good news.
The bullet was lodged in the buccinator muscle on the contralateral side of the mouth. I got it out. He has a fractured jawbone, which I said, and he lost a lot of blood. But I think he'll pull out of it all right.
He's not conscious, is he, Doctor?
No, he isn't. Listen, Captain.
Yes?
Do all your men carry a standard service revolver?
What do you mean?
Well, do you all carry 38?
In uniform, the men are required to carry a 38 special. Why?
Is that what Patrolman Bevan had?
Yes. What's your point?
Well, the slug I took out of him was a little beat up, but it doesn't look like a 38 to me.
Doesn't it?
I'm no expert on guns, but, well, I used to fool around
the slug?
Well, I'm holding it, Captain. A detective from your precinct asked me to.
Lieutenant King?
Yes, I think Lieutenant King.
Well, hang on to it, Doctor. Just hang on to it.
I will. I intend to.
And thanks. Thanks a lot.
All right.
Bye, Doctor.
Any change in his condition, Captain?
There's been all kinds of changes. I'm going upstairs to see Lieutenant King. I went through the back room and upstairs to see Lieutenant Matt King. He telephoned to Dr. Lowfield. Detective Vitale was sent down to Bellevue to get the slug taken from Patrolman Bevan's jaw and take it to the police laboratory for a ballistics examination, along with Patrolman Bevan's service revolver. If the slug was fired from a .32 caliber gun, Patrolman Bevan could not have shot himself. By 8 a.m., there was no word on the ballistics examination. I turned out the platoon for the day tour, signed the blotter, left the precinct to go off duty. Ellen was awake and dressed when I got home. I talked with her while she had breakfast. She told me she was going to 34th Street because both Macy's and Gimbel's had advertised big linen sales. Ellen left the house and I went to bed. A hot sun flashed in under the shade. I don't know how long it took me to fall asleep. Maybe it only seemed long. Hello?
Captain?
Yes?
Matt King.
Oh, hello, Matt.
Were you asleep?
Yeah, that's all right. What time is it?
1 o'clock, 5 minutes after.
Well, what have you got?
The slug they took out of Bevan.
Yes?
It wasn't a .32, it was a .38. The doctor was wrong.
Oh?
But it wasn't fired from Bevan's service revolver.
Wasn't it?
Not according to the report.
Well, that's good news. If there's anything to it, Matt, will you let the man on TS know so he can call me?
I'll call him myself, Captain, as soon as I know anything.
I got up and got dressed. After I had some coffee, I took my car over to Fred's to be washed and greased. I returned home close to 4. Ellen was there. She told me Lieutenant King had phoned. I called him back. The man arrested in the 34th had a record of 5 arrests and 2 convictions for burglary. After questioning by Lieutenant King and Assistant District Attorney Louis Sullent, he admitted shooting Patrolman Bevan. He was brought into the 21st and booked on charges of assault in Section 1897. The gun in his possession at the time of his arrest was sent to the police laboratory for ballistics examination to corroborate his statement. That night, en route to a meeting of the Captain's Endowment Association at the 71st Regiment Armory in Manhattan, I stopped in at Bellevue Hospital.
Oh, hello, Captain.
How is he, Mrs. Bevan?
He's better, much better.
Well, that's good.
He's been propped up since about 4 o'clock this afternoon. Of course, he can't talk, and it's hard to feed him much, but the doctor says he's doing fine, just fine. I was going out now so he could get some sleep.
Well, then I won't stay.
Oh,
I was
that's all right. He's not asleep yet. I'm sure he'd want to see you. It's this way.
You've been here since this morning?
Oh, yes. My mother was here for a while, and then she went out to the house to take care of the kids. Miss Creedy couldn't stay all day if her children were alone, you know. It's in here. Let me stick my head in and make sure he's not asleep. Joe? He's still up. Come on in. Guess who's here, Joe? Captain Kennelly.
Hello, Joe.
The doctor told me it'd be at least a week before he'd be able to talk again. You know, it was real funny. The detectives in the precinct, what were their names, Joe? Kinney and Goldman, they came down here and wanted a statement from Joe on what happened. Do you know them, Captain?
Oh, yes.
But it was really funny, wasn't it, Joe? He couldn't say a word to them. It was all right anyway, because they knew what happened from the man that shot him. Joe saw him come down a fire escape. He chased him. He chased him into that basement.
Mm-hmm.
Is that right, Joe? Well, he just robbed an apartment. Anyway, Joe followed him down into the basement. He was looking around for him with his flashlight, and the man was hiding behind a partition. And then when Joe got this close, he shot. Joe fired one shot, but didn't do any good. Isn't that right, Joe? Anyway, we're glad they got him. Very glad. We're glad Joe's going to be all right. I was worried this morning, Captain.
So was I.
I didn't know how things were going to turn out. I thought he was dead or dying. But look at him. Strong as an ox. Thank you.
Well, maybe it's a good thing to keep in mind, Mrs. Bevan, for all of us. Things can look a lot different than they really are.
First Precinct, Sergeant Klein. I can hear you. What's the trouble there? You all alone? How much is on the clock? $2 and what? Why can't you pay it? Where'd she lose it? Where? Doesn't she have any money? Nothing. Well, all right. You're driving a hack. Drive her into the station house. We'll talk about it when you get here.
And so it goes. Around the clock, through the week, every day, every year. The police precinct in the city of New York is a flesh and blood merry-go-round. Anyone can catch the brass ring. Or the brass ring can catch anyone.
21st Precinct. A factual account of the way the police work in the world's largest city is presented with the official cooperation of the Patrolmen's Benevolent Association, an organization of more than 20,000 members of the Police Department, City of New York. Everett Sloan in the role of Captain Kennelly, Ken Lynch as Lieutenant King. Written and directed by Stanley Niss. Produced for CBS Radio by John Ives. Art Hanna speaking.
That's it for this episode of Case Closed. I'll be back next Wednesday with more. You can find more old-time radio in the meantime at relicradio.com. Past episodes of Case Closed, more from 21st Precinct, more from The Saint, more from a variety of different types of old-time radio. There's also links there to our Facebook page, Shoutcast Stream Forum, and our donate button. If you'd like to help support this and all the shows, you can do so from the website as well. Thank you very much to those who have. Thank you for joining me today. Talk to you again next Wednesday with another episode of Case Closed. Case Closed is produced by and for RelicRadio.com. Rebroadcast of this show without permission is strictly prohibited.